Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Roar Lions Roar. I'm your host tonight, Matt Filipovits, joined by my phenomenal co-host in a very sunny-looking Columbus, Ohio, is Mr. Bill DeFilippo. Bill, hello, how are you?
Doing good. And currently just enjoying a little bit of Champions League soccer on in the background as we do a podcast about, do you want to handle this one, Matthew?
Not champions.
The word champion, yeah.
Yeah, not champions. I like to give a little anecdote about my life at the top of every single show. I saw Steely Dan this weekend, and there is no way Donald Fagen knew what city he was in. He did not say the city. His sunglasses were as dark as I've ever seen for it being 7:30 p.m. indoors in the winter in Chicago. It was absolutely fantastic. And then the Eagles were on right after that, and that was a great time. Don Henley, maybe, I don't know if he was pumping in like his singing, but if he wasn't, that was the most impressive singing, like live, I've ever heard. And considering the fact that he's 76, it was a triumph of a show.
Huh. It's funny because you mentioned the Eagles for a second, and my brain immediately went to, oh yeah, they just got Saquon, but different Eagles.
Saquon did not play in the band, nor did he sign with the Chicago Bears like I hoped he would. But we're going to hear her talk about Eagles, Bears, or anything else that is mean in nature. That's probably not true. Bill, today we're going to talk about Penn State's wide receivers in our debriefing of 2023 and our look ahead to spring of 2024. Before we get there, though, spring ball started today, March 12th, when we are recording this episode. Early feedback out of camp has been one big thing and then just a couple of fun practice clips we've seen. Bill, let's start with the big thing. Drew Shelton, who started in the Peach Bowl, not started, but played an awful lot in that Peach Bowl with Olu on a pitch count, is out for spring after he got some kind of shoulder surgery after the season. So it sounds like it will not keep him out for too long, and we will see what that means for the roster moving into spring.
Just to note, Shelton actually did start at left tackle with Olu Fashanu not playing. Olu and Kalen King were the two players who it wasn't clear if they were going to play. Ended up not
that's
playing.
Right. That's right. Apologies.
Shelton at 72 snaps, tied with Sal Wormley for the most snaps along the offensive line for Penn State. And yeah, it's a big bit of news. Things were shaping up for Shelton to, you know, I think Olu Fashanu said at the combine that Shelton is either more talented or going to be better than him. It was something to that extent. And for him to be losing out on spring ball because of an injury that I believe James Franklin said he picked it up at the end of last year, carried it a bit, was something he was able to play through but needed to get surgery, opens the door right up for someone to take that spot. I mean, in the Peach Bowl, Anthony Donko was really impressive at right tackle. Nolan Rucci coming in from Wisconsin. Some really positive updates about how he's been able to put on a bit of weight since he came to Happy Valley. He was listed, I think, 305 pounds. He's up to about 315, I believe James Franklin said. So question marks at left tackle, certainly for Penn State. Question marks at left tackle, a very important position to get sorted out. But as long as Drew Shelton is able to work through that and get back up to speed, you know, fingers crossed it doesn't turn into a big issue for the Nittany Lions this season.
Yeah, the good thing with Shelton is, I mean, this is a guy, it's year three on campus, and he burned redshirt as a true freshman and played an awful lot these past two years. This isn't a guy who needs these kind of reps in this kind of environment. All reps are good reps, especially in a new offense, and especially with him having to replace a likely top 15 pick in Olu Fashanu. But still, this isn't really the end of the world. Get healthy. And let's roll into the season as healthy as we can, and we'll see what happens from there. Bill, anything else you want to talk about?
If you're going to be hurt, this is the time of year to be hurt.
Oh, right? Yeah. Especially with something like that.
You obviously don't want to lose out on spring ball under any circumstances, but losing out on spring ball and being able to be healthy for the summer and then into camp right before the start of the season, that's really important. So hopefully, as long as he is okay by the time camp in the summer rolls around, I'm not going to feel too bad about this, but certainly does stink for him. He's a guy who the opportunity was there for him to kind of shut the door going into the summer and going into the start of the season about who is going to be Penn State's starting left tackle. Not going to have that opportunity now.
Yeah, you mentioned Donko, who I think is going to get a lot of run at right tackle. You mentioned Rucci. Also factoring in former five-star, the only five-star lineman, I think, still, even with Cooper Cousins, the only five-star lineman to sign with Penn State in the James Franklin era in Javon Williams, who redshirted last year, I'm sure is also going to get a good shot to get a ton of reps this spring. So great opportunity for a lot of guys to take advantage. Bill, anything you've seen today, whether that be out there on social media, in one of our many Slacks, from the start of spring ball that really caught your eye? For me, the funniest thing I saw was Andy Kotelnicki, who we have, you know, we thought is going to come out there with a lot of energy. And to watch him in like a little clip drop multiple F-bombs in front of, I think it's Marcus Hagans' son, trying to get his guys to run back, I thought was pretty funny and should bring some much needed fire to that Penn State offense. Anything that you want to talk about off the top there?
Yeah, there was a clip of Drew Auer running the read option with Quentin Martin pitching to him, with Kotelnicki acting as the acting as the edge player. So, listen, I don't know if Drew Auer running the read option is something that I something I expect under basically any circumstances, but I guess it's going to be part of what Penn State's going for this year.
Hey, it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. That's the kind of thing where, like, in the old NCAA games, when you accidentally click the option button with your, like, pocket passing quarterback and it's a nightmare. I hope we have the inverse of that. But again, I don't expect that to be a big part of the offense, especially with Aller.
Yeah, it's a club to have in the bag.
Yeah. Hey, that's all you can ask for. Bill, I have no good transition here. I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off. I have no good transition.
Go ahead.
We're here to talk about, like I said at the top, thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed our return. Like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. I forgot to say that last time. Bill, let's talk Penn State wide receivers.
Sure.
This unit was bad last year. It was not good. I had this pulled up in front of me here, Bill. Of Penn State's top five pass catchers last year, two of them were wide receivers. Keandre Lambert-Smith, who's back, and the other one was Dante Cephas. And Bill, the way we did it last time out, I say that like we had a game, the last podcast we did last week, we talked about things that happened last year and then what to expect moving forward. I don't know how, since a lot of these guys in that receiver room are back, it's going to be a bit of a blurred line. And I don't know off the top how to handle the Dante Cephas of it all. So, Bill, I'm just going to pass the mic to you. Dante Cephas, in his 1 year in Penn State, 22 catches, 246 yards. That's an 11.2 average. Not great, not terrible. His long was 26 yards. He had two touchdowns. I think they both came in November against Maryland. This was supposed to be a guy who came in and immediately boosted Penn State's receiving core. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Frankly, he looked like he didn't know what was going on a lot of the time. It looked like he was blocking when Drew Aller was trying to throw to him sometimes. Looked like he was running the wrong routes into other people sometimes. I don't want to pick on a college kid. That's not what this podcast is ever going to do. But Bill, what went wrong for this player in his one season in Penn State?
Yeah, I think it basically just comes down to he wasn't on campus. He wasn't on campus in time to really get embedded. I mean, I don't remember exactly when he came onto campus last year. I think it was in the summer.
May.
So came out in May. Okay, so he missed all of spring ball. He missed winter workouts. He steps onto campus. I believe he had to graduate from Kent State before he could officially get on the Penn State's campus. So
correct.
So he gets in a little bit late. He's playing catch up with a brand new team, with a brand new offensive coordinator, with a brand new quarterback. Not just for him. You know, it wasn't like he had a guy like Sean Clifford and Mitchell Tinsley, where Tinsley was able to get onto campus. And I'm pretty sure I think Tinsley also got on earlier than he did.
Correct.
But Tinsley had the added bonus of Sean Clifford was here. Sean Clifford was going to hold his hand through everything. Sean Clifford was going to be able to sit down with him and say, listen, I got a firm grasp of everything here. I know exactly what needs to happen to be Penn State's, to be a receiver for Penn State, to be an offensive player for Penn State. Let me walk you through that. And Tinsley was able to get up to speed pretty quickly. With Dante Cephas, he comes onto campus a little bit late. He's not able to have spring ball. He's not able to have all this stuff. Drew, you know, he, as a first-time quarterback who is learning on the fly, asking him to kind of shoulder what a receiver had to shoulder as well, that also isn't, you know, that's not something that's necessarily going to go well. And like you mentioned, there were just a lot of times where it seemed like him and Drew were just not quite on the same page. The one I go back to all the time was Penn State's up 10-3 against Rutgers. They have the ball on their 5-yard line. I believe it was a second and 10, or it was the second and 10 or the third and 10, where after a false start, they get backed up to their 3. Aller throws a perfect pass to the sideline. If Dante Cephas runs the route that he is supposed to, I think it was just supposed to be a little out route. He catches that 2 feet in on the sideline. Penn State has the ball something like the 20-25 yard line and is able to 20-25 yard line. He gets going and the drive has a chance to turn into something. Instead, what ends up happening is Cephas runs the wrong route. And as a result, third and 10, I believe that was the second down play, the third down play, they're just kind of dead to rights. There's nothing that could really happen. And those little missteps that happen along the way, those just little thing, it's very easy to forget how fine the margins are in football. And when you basically give yourself no margin for error, you're going to be in trouble. And we saw that with Penn State's passing attack. Keandre Lambert-Smith had whatever problems he had being Penn State's number one wide receiver. Dante Cephas had whatever problems he had in being a guy who could be a big option in Penn State's wide receiver room. Trey Wallace obviously had his injury woes, which hurt him in trying to be Penn State's a number one what type receiver option for Penn State. And you put it all together, God, it was just hard. It was unfair to ask for that much out of Dante Cephas, and we ended up seeing what happened as a result. He wasn't able to produce to the extent anyone wanted to, and Penn State, you know, he's no longer with the program.
So he goes off to Kansas State, off to the Little Apple in Manhattan, Kansas, to join a Big 12 program that I think he's going to be able to have success at. And Bill, I really don't know how we want to take it from here, because this room is such a hodgepodge of reasons things went wrong. So let's talk Keandre Lambert-Smith. I think he can be in his own category, considering the fact that he more than doubled up the next closest receiver as a pass catcher last year. For Keandre Lambert-Smith, in his first year as number one, 53 catches, 673 yards, and 4 touchdowns. By all accounts, a pretty decent year for a receiver. It's not bad. It's not great. Bill, Keandre Lambert-Smith, a lot of the time it felt like he disappeared in a lot of moments. Like, and I don't know if that's just because the offense felt handicapped a lot of the time by the way Yursich and Aller ran things for a while. But what were your thoughts on Keandre Lambert-Smith's first season as Penn State's true number one guy?
I think he wasn't put in a position to succeed because he didn't play the right role for his skill set.
That's a great way to word it. I couldn't agree more.
And again, like, this isn't necessarily his fault. Obviously you want him to be able to be that guy. But when Harrison Wallace is more of the guy in the out, going to be more of the guy on the outside, and he, you know, picks up a couple of injuries, he's really compromised. When Dante Cephas, again, just a perfect storm of reasons why he couldn't, you know, he wasn't able to get up to speed. You're asking Keandre Lambert-Smith to be your number one guy when he is, by profile and just about everything else, a slot guy. He is a guy who should be in the slot, should be able to take advantage of the fact that he is quick, he's fast, when he's engaged, he's a really good route runner. 6'1", 194 pounds. He has the profile that you want out of a really dominant slot receiver. Instead, he needed to be Penn State's number one guy, which... you could be a number one guy from the slot, certainly, but with everything else happening around him, like, I don't think it's a coincidence that probably his best, his best game as a wide receiver at Penn State or that last season, 4 catches, 123 yards, 30.8 yards per reception, 2 touchdowns against West Virginia. In that game, both Harrison Wallace had more catches than him. Malik McLean also pitched in 4 receptions. And you kind of got the best version of Keandre Lambert-Smith because he wasn't a guy that a defense could pay all its attention to. What happened instead was Keandre Lambert-Smith became the guy that Penn State just had to feed the football to in its wide receiver core. And for reasons that I think were on him, he wasn't always the most locked in. I forget what game it was. Thomas Frank Carr highlighted it. It might've been Michigan or Ohio State, where the ball is snapped and he just stands there looking at the ball being snapped for a second and a half before he starts to run his route. And it's just dead on arrival. That stuff can't happen. But when he's part of a whole receiving core, a healthy receiving core, and not all the attention is placed on him, I think he has the potential to be a really capable and really productive wide receiver.
I think you really did put it best, Bill. I think he really showed that he can be a productive player. I'm really glad you highlighted that West Virginia game and the fact that that came with Trey Wallace and Malik McClain emerging as other legitimate options. I think that's a great call out that I didn't think about. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see what he can do, that he can kind of take a step back and reevaluate his role in the offense. And Bill, let's shift right over. We'll give Trey Wallace a little bit of a, it sucks what happened to you this year, but we're kind of going to focus on next year for him in a little bit. When Trey was on the field, I think it was very clear Penn State thought he was their best receiver. And I think that's kind of been confirmed by what we're hearing this staff and these other players talk about him in
Yeah, I don't have the quote, but it was something that Tyler Donahue of 24/7 leaned on a lot in the lead up to the bowl game, which was that in the preseason, Trey Wallace was kind of talked about and viewed as Penn State's number one wide receiver. And that just didn't have a chance to really do that because of injury. 7 receptions for 72 yards against West Virginia, 3 for 26 against Delaware, and then the next game when he records a catch was against UMass 5 weeks later. He played against Ohio State, and the next game he records a pass was against Ole Miss in the bowl game. And in the bowl game, 4 receptions, 67 yards, and a touchdown. Not like a world beater or anything, but something that Penn State could have really used just having an option like that. And he, as a result, just a lot of things went wrong that were outside of Penn State's control, outside of Penn State's wide receivers' control, that made it so when there was a mistake by Keandre Lambert-Smith, by Dante Cephas, by insert name here, it becomes a lot harder to overcome.
So we can't really spend that much time on Trey, just because, but Andrew, you pretty much confirmed that by saying, hey, look how little he was really able to be on this field for. So we'll move everybody else, and I'll call this group the Show Me group. This is the group that showed a little bit of something at different times throughout the year, and they now need to take a very, very large step in the spring. And in this group, I'll put Amari Evans, 4 catches for 94 yards and 1 touchdown. Feels crazy to think about what the kind of year Amari Evans ended up having. Liam Clifford, 13 catches for 130 yards. I think there's a decent player there. Malik McClain, 6 catches for 71 yards and 1 touchdown. A lot of that happened those first 2 weeks of the year. Don't look up the percentage because it's probably in the high 80s or low 90s. And then Caden Saunders, 6 catches for 56 yards and 1 touchdown. Bill, those are not impressive numbers really from anybody there. But I think there's little things to take away from each of those players that we can build upon. You can take whoever you want in that group and run wherever you want to go with this.
Yeah, the guy that interests me the most, and I think this will apply to a lot of Penn State fans, is Amari Evans. It's because we saw what Amari Evans can do and what he could bring to Penn State's offense during his freshman year, where he caught 5 balls for 55 yards. Not a world beater or anything like that, but he showed that he has kind of top-end speed that Penn State's wide receiver room just lacked last year.
He burned redshirt as a converted quarterback in year 1. Like, that kind of tells me all I need to know.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And then this year, 1 catch for 4 yards against Delaware, 1 catch for 5 yards against Maryland. Mike Yurcich gets fired. 1 catch for 25 yards against Rutgers, 1 catch for 60 yards against Michigan State. Having an option that can provide speed like that. Because much as I like Liam Clifford, he's never going to be a guy who's a burner. Like, that's just not his game. He's not the most physically imposing guy. He's not the most physically, you know, he's not a guy who can really beat you with speed. He's a guy who beats you with technique. He's a guy who beats you with having good hands. Guy like Caden Saunders, you know, I'm still hopeful for a breakout for him. But at the same time, it's a real put up or shut up year for him, I'd say. Like
year three is a big one. Year three is a big one for a lot of guys.
And the guy who recruited him, Taylor Stubblefield, not here anymore, new wide receiver coach, comes in, new quarterback. Like, again, all these sorts of things that were going to make it difficult. But he has to show that he deserves a spot on this team. I believe in his talent. I believe in the talent a lot of these guys have. But at a certain point, it has to show up. And when you look at Saunders, Evans, Clifford, kind of that trio of dudes, one of those guys has an elite skill, and it's this track speed that Amari Evans possesses. And if Andy Kotelnicki can harness that, if Marquise Higgins can harness that, that is a huge, huge, huge boost for this Penn State offense. That is a huge boost for this Penn State offense. And
Look what happened against Michigan State when that threat of that big play and that burner down the field happens. I get Michigan State was a mess this past year, but at the same time, that game felt like the most easy and free we'd seen the offense operate since that West Virginia game.
No, absolutely. There was a lot of talk after Mike Yurcich got fired, and I believe this is something we mentioned on the last pod, from Ty Howell and Juwan Sider when they took over as co-offense coordinators, about the need to simplify, about the need to play fast, about the need to do all these sorts of things. And you think about that for 2 seconds. Who are the guys that are probably the most likely to benefit from that? It's the younger guys who are learning and growing and doing new things within Penn State's offense. And it's not a coincidence that the Michigan State game is one of the best ones that Drew had. Not a coincidence that Catron Allen and Nick Singleton had their 2 best games against Michigan State. And obviously part of this is that Michigan State sucked. Michigan State was a terrible football team last year. But
Landgren's coming home, baby. Stay in here.
Yeah.
With the fall of the Big Ten East comes the bolting down of the Landgren trophy.
Absolutely. And you then see a guy like Amari Evans is able to make a bit of a contribution. Dante Cephas, 3 receptions for 36 yards. He made a bit of a contribution. Khalil Dinkins had a reception in that game. Malik Mega had a reception in that game. If you are able to make things easier on your guys, that is inherently going to be a good thing. And Penn State was able to make things easier on their guys towards the end of the season. And I think this is a good time, Matt, to mention that, you know, we'll read the full quote a little bit later, but James Franklin said in his quote today about the wide receiver room, I think there's some.
Sorry, real quick, Bill. This is at his pre-spring press conference. So winter workouts had already happened. So we have a pretty good idea of where this room is currently at. It's the most up-to-date we can have it at.
And we'll read the full quote in a second. But the line that I think is important to mention here, I think there's some things we could do offensively to help as well. Whatever that means, and this is total reckless speculation on my part. You think of how James Franklin, after Mike Yurcich got fired, express some grievances about him. You think of how important it was to the guys who took over for him, saying, simplify, play fast. You think of Andy Kotelnicki and how his offenses, they play very, very fast, and they are very much, or at least at Kansas, it was, we're going to get the ball in the guy's hands, and they're just going to run by you. I think, again, just reckless speculation on my part, James Franklin believes his offense, his wide receivers are going to be at their best if it's not putting a ton on their plates. And if you could take a little bit off the plate of Liam Clifford, off of Amari Evans, off of Caden Saunders, off of Malik McClain, and just make life easier for guys, I think that's going to pay dividends.
I could not agree more. And then Bill, we'll wrap up last year's state of the state for that room, for lack of a better term, by talking about the other guys in that room who just frankly didn't really do much. Malik Mega, back for a 5th year. Awesome guy to have on special teams. Last year, 3 catches for 9 yards. Christian Driver, 1 catch for 8 yards. He has since transferred off to the University of Minnesota. Best of luck to him in his new Big Ten spot. Tyler Johnson, a redshirt freshman, and Anthony Ivey did not record stats last year. And then Carmelo Taylor, the only freshman wide receiver to join the team last year. Very speedster guy, a long ways away from being able to physically take a hit, I think, frankly, in game action in Big Ten. He redshirted last year, did not appear in game action. And then I think this offseason we learned he has a red meat allergy, which makes it really hard for him to gain weight. So best of luck to him.
I missed that one. What?
Yeah. Yeah. It can happen. I don't know the details on it.
No. I'm sure it can't happen, but damn, I didn't know that. That's unfortunate.
Let me look it up in real time while we do it. Bill, do you want to
not because there's nothing you could do if you can't eat red meat. It's just, that's a thing that can help. Anyway, Anyway, let's talk about our podcast sponsor, Home Field Apparel. Home Field's been sponsoring this podcast since the very beginning of us going podcast only. They've been nothing but a great partner for us, and they've been nothing but great to Penn State fans, putting out lines of apparel that makes sense in any Penn State collection, whether you want a t-shirt, whether you want a quarter zip, whether you want a bomber jacket, whether you want joggers, whether you want a hoodie, a crew neck sweater, whatever it is, Home Field Apparel is going to have something for you. It's going to have something for a friend or a loved one that you have who maybe didn't go to Penn State, and maybe they are a Penn State fan despite that. Maybe they went somewhere else and they love another school. They went to a basketball school in particular. Home Field has been rolling out stuff this week for basketball schools, shooting shirts. I believe they have some vintage jerseys in there. I'm just going through their website right now. If they're a racing fan, they have a ton of stuff from Hendrick Motorsports that I think they might love. So plenty of stuff from Home Field Apparel, plenty of stuff you should consider getting from Home Field Apparel. And if you want to be able to get something from Home Field at a bit of a discount, use the promo code RLR23 for 15% off of your first order. Again, promo code RLR23 for 15% off of your first order. Thank you, as always, to Home Field Apparel for sponsoring this podcast. Matt, if you want to take it over from here, go ahead.
Bill, I can't find anything to verify this red meat allergy thing, but I'm pretty sure it's true. I'm pretty sure I saw it somewhere out there in like one of his media availabilities. Anyway, Bill, 2024 is a new year. It's a new day. It's a new dawn. Sorry for my pausing there. I heard Bill changing headphones, so I didn't want to interrupt him. I'm not going to edit.
Did that not work? Like I thought.
No, it did. Now I got you, but I heard my echo, so I let it go.
Good. Good. Awesome. All right, we're back.
Seamless. I'm not editing that out. Bill, happy 2024. It's a new year, new opportunity, new faces to enter this. In spring, and we want to keep this because we're going to have a big preview in August, and we don't want to waste everybody's time by giving them the same episode twice in a year. For spring, Bill, let's start off with the new guy in this room, and the biggest name, I think, maybe to join Penn State's receiver room in a long time. And that's Julian Fleming. I think I told this joke on the podcast earlier in the year, but I wrote a couple years back that Julian Fleming was a Penn State commit, and then somebody in the comments yelled at me. Turns out I was right. I was just off by about 4 years. So Now that Julian Fleming comes in, his production at Ohio State last year in particular, not that impressive. 26 catches for 270 yards and no touchdowns. But he spent 4 years in what I think is fair to say the best wide receiver room in the country. For Julian Fleming, a guy who I don't think really has anything to prove because I think his role is going to be very specific, what does success look like for Julian Fleming in spring of 2024?
It's interesting because there's a bit of a perception versus reality thing with Fleming. And the perception is based on the fact that he was ultra blue chip wide receiver recruit, number one recruit in Pennsylvania, top five recruit in the country. I think ESPN might have had him as the number one recruit in America.
And out of Catawissa, PA, in east central Pennsylvania.
Went to Southern Columbia High School, football powerhouse in Pennsylvania. Single A competition. They consistently win state championships. Really, really great program. And then he gets to Ohio State. He gets into the best wide receiver room in college football. Deals with some injuries over his first couple of years.
And the COVID season. He got there in the middle of like the weirdest time ever to join a college football program.
Yeah. And injuries ended up being an issue for him. I can't let's see, he played 7 games as a freshman, 8 games as a sophomore, and then 11 and 12 as a junior and a senior. He was able to get his body right, and unsurprisingly, he starts making his best contributions once that happened. But he's not the fastest guy. He's a very strong guy. He's a very good run blocker. But you look at his numbers over the course of his college football career, 79 receptions, 963 yards, 12.2 yards per reception, 7 touchdowns. A lot of that production came in 2022 when C.J. Stroud was his quarterback, 34 receptions, 533 yards, and 6 of his 7 touchdowns. I think when the perception of Julian Fleming, prodigal son, coming home, going to give Penn State the true number one receiver that they've lacked, you know, going to be this kind of storybook thing. I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't think it will.
And it's not a knock against him. James Franklin has talked a lot about how his experience and maturity, his approach, all things that have really been assets to this wide receiver room. But he still hasn't stepped onto the field yet. I don't think he's going to be a guy who catches 70 balls for 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns. But you look at what Penn State's wide receiver room was last year. Top receiver, like you mentioned, Keandre Lambert-Smith, 53 receptions, 673 yards, 4 touchdowns. Number 2 receiver, Dante Cephas. Trey Wallace gets the little asterisk because of his injuries. 22 receptions, 246 yards, 2 touchdowns. Do I think that Julian Fleming could do better than that? Yes, I do. Do I think Julian Fleming doing better than that, plus hopefully, not knock on wood, a full season of Trey Wallace, means that Penn State has a little bit more security in its wide receiver room? I do, and that's really all that matters. If he's able to come in, provide that element of maturity and professionalism, which... It could be patronizing to a guy to say that his most important contribution is going to be something like that. Because a lot of the times that could be just kind of a backhanded way of saying he's not good enough to do it on the field. I don't think that's the case here. I think he is good enough to be a reliable option for Drew Aller, a safe option for Drew. I know he had some problems with drops at Ohio State, which... I'll take a couple of drops if he's able to add some production on top of that. But just come in, bring that level of professionalism of having been in the best wide receiver room in the nation, raise the standard for everybody around you. Maybe get named a team captain. We'll see if he ends up getting named a team captain. That would be a really cool thing. And if he could turn that into some level of production that makes it so Penn State's second, third, fourth option, wherever he ends up being a lot better than the second, third, fourth option last year, I think that's great.
I 100% agree. I think his ceiling is probably Penn State's wide receiver too, and that's a phenomenal place to exist in the hierarchy of college football. And I really do think he can be a humongous asset in terms of his maturity, what he learned at Ohio State. Listen, a rising tide lifts all boats. If he can be the guy that goes in there and says, hey, redshirt freshman, hey, true freshman, hey, third year guys, let's wake up a little bit. Like, there's no COVID years anymore. Your eligibility clock is 4 years, 5 years, or you're done. Like, that's all you get. So, and for some of those guys, they're approaching that halfway point of their career. So I think it's going to be really important for him to be that leader in the room. And Bill, we'll move on. And again, the obvious caveat here for what makes success in the spring for all these guys is learn the playbook. Don't get hurt. We won't just repeat that over and over again. For Trey Wallace, Bill, I think success this spring is one thing: stay healthy, catch a lot of balls from Drew Aller. We can move on from Trey.
Yeah.
Keandre.
Go ahead and Keandre, because I think Keandre is the guy to read the quote Franklin gave today after. So go ahead and say a little bit about Keandre, and then I'll read the quote from Franklin.
Keandre Lambert-Smith, I think success for him this spring is learning every part of that playbook, and I'm sure they all will, but I think for Keandre it's very important. And then he has to work with that staff and identify where he can find his West Virginia game again, position wise. And that's what I think this is going to be. I think there's going to be a lot of moving parts of this offense, but I think for Keandre Lambert-Smith, the big thing here is going to be find where I can hit my highs at the highest rate is what I think the goal for him is this spring.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And I think, like I mentioned, this is the place to dive into that quote James Franklin gave today. Where, because I think Keandre is kind of the avatar for the entire wide receiver room. A guy who...
The Last Airbender or the Blue People one?
Never seen either of them.
Are you serious? You've never seen Avatar, The Last Airbender?
Correct.
Oh my God. Appa, Yip Yip. Oh, great show. Not a sponsor, cool. But they could be.
I will be busy watching basketball. So Keandre Lambert-Smith is, no one questions his talent. No one questions that at his best, he could be a really dangerous option for Penn State. And despite that, despite being the number one option that caught 53 balls for 673 yards and 4 touchdowns last year, for the offense of a team that ended ranked in the top 15 nationally, had one of the top scoring offenses in America. I don't have what their SP plus was at the end of last season, but I'm pretty sure it was top 30 or so. Mm-hmm. Being the number one receiver for an offense that, pulling it up right here, yeah, it was a lot of stat padding against not great teams, but Penn State still averaged 36.2 points per game, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12th nationally. He was an honorable mention in the All-Big Ten, on the All-Big Ten team. He was not a guy who was able to impose himself enough to get the recognition of being one of the, I can't remember how many guys get named to the All Big Ten team, but one of the 10,
I think it's
12,
three. So, I think it's three per like run of it, and there's three of them. So I think there's 9 guys who earn All Big Ten recognition, including the honorable mentions.
So 9 guys for the coaches or media last year got a bit All Big Ten, not on one of the 3 teams. And Keandre Lambert-Smith wasn't one of them. And I think that leads into this quote from James Franklin. I don't think we've ever really had a talent issue at wideout. I think it's as good as anywhere in the country. You take that and you take another year of experience. I think there's some things we could do offensively to help as well. Marquise Hagan's having his second year as the receivers coach is helpful. Julian Fleming has brought an element of experience, a maturity that I think has been really good and has approached things the right way since he stepped on campus. And that quote is about the whole wide receiver room. It's not hard to view that quote as being about Keandre Lambert-Smith specifically, about talking how talent is not the problem. More experience will help. Different things within the offense will help. Marquise Hagan's having a second year to build up that continuity with these guys helps. Someone coming into the room and becoming essentially, the way Franklin makes it sound, the leader of the room, the tone setter in the room. Again, that's a message for, go through the roster, Omari Evans. That's a roster for Liam Clifford, for Kane Saunders, for Tyler Johnson. Insert name here. All that stuff does not matter. All that stuff does not matter if Keandre Lambert-Smith wasn't able to do all of it in the first place. All that stuff is not important if Keandre Lambert-Smith wasn't able to, last year when he was the guy, do all those things. He wasn't able to. And now it's put up, or you mentioned it's put up or shut up time for a lot of guys down the roster. More than anyone, it's put up or shut up time for Keandre Lambert-Smith. Do you want to play in the NFL or do you want to be an accountant? Because that is the question being presented to you this season. And you have to come out this spring and show that you deserve to be a guy with all your talent that deserves a shot in the NFL. That's it.
Yeah, and I feel like, listen, just like reading between the tea leaves, I think that's a message the staff has had to get across, and I think they've done a pretty good job of getting that across, because the focus here has to be paramount. Like, this is the time. Again, he got lucky with that COVID year to have the fifth-year option to even come back and run this back again, and if he hits, it can hit, and it can hit for a major payday, but if it doesn't, man, it's going to raise a lot more questions for us going into next year. All right, so Bill, there's 13 scholarship receivers currently on the roster as we head into spring. I don't really want to go through each of them and give them all, you know, 6 minutes of game clock, for lack of a better term. So Bill, let's keep this to one sentence answers, except for two guys specifically that you want to talk more about. And you can flag them to me as I say their name, if you want to talk more about them. But give me your successful spring for these guys I'm about to lay out. You ready?
Cool.
We'll start from the fifth year guys and move on to our final one, which is going to be an early enrollee who's hurt. So whatever. Fifth year guy, Malik Mega. For me, success. Maybe there's a red zone package for you. Work on your special teams coverage.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think he is what he is. So can you continue to be one of the best special teams players that Penn State has? Anything you get as a receiver out of him is gravy.
Liam Clifford, keep setting the baseline. Like, keep proving you belong on the field for a good amount of reps a game.
Yeah, just be a reliable option. You're not going to be, in all likelihood, you're probably not a guy who's going to be a starter. But there's very clearly some level of trust in you from Drew Aller and the coaching staff. Continue to have that. And if you get called on because someone gets hurt or you really take advantage of those opportunities, go ahead and take advantage of it.
Might have had the catch of the year last year down the sideline against Illinois at the end of that first half.
Well, certainly up there.
Malik McLean. This is a guy I want to talk more about.
Sure. Here's the thing with Malik McLean. I'll say this really quick, then you could take it and do whatever.
Go for it.
When he came to campus, he was viewed as his first year going to be a bit of a wash, has stuff he has to do. His second year is the one where there's going to be some sort of expectation for him. It's that second year. Can he live up to that expectation?
That's basically what I'm going to say in a more long-winded way. He came out way too hot out of the gate. For him to come out there against West Virginia and those just pure physical traits came out and it proved that he can produce at a high level. And from there, it really just got in the way of his, I think, realistic expectations setting in. And I think it was really hard for him and really hard for the staff to watch that production quickly dry up. And now it's time for him to prove he learned a lot in that last year and to come back out and really start delivering. So that's where I'm at with him. Bill, I think you're going to ask me to stop on this guy. Amari Evans, third year guy.
I'm not going to ask you to stop on him just because I already kind of said my bit on him, but
Successful string for Amari. What's that look like?
Can you show it was a wrong decision that you didn't play for the first 10 weeks of last year? Can you bring that element of speed that this offense needs, that this offense needed last year? And despite the fact that it needed it, they didn't trust you.
I love that. That's a great one. For me, it's control your chaos. He's a guy who can create a lot of havoc, but he has to be the one in control of everything. With that kind of speed, there's a lot of danger that can happen when he's on the field. He just has to get everything else under control and really harness the chaos he can bring to the field.
Yep.
Caden Saunders.
Completely fair. Oh, God.
Success for me, I'll go first on this one. Success for me for him this spring is, number one, lock up that punt return job. Let's get that out of the way as early as we can. Number two, this is such a tough one for me. Prove to me that you are the player that I think you are. I think Caden Saunders is going to be a good football player very, very soon. Prove me right. Prove me right that you can be a legitimate number three, number four option in the Big Ten, and let's launch this back half of your career off on the right foot.
Consistency. I think it just comes down to consistency. Can you be a consistent option for Drew, a guy from your state who came into your recruit into Penn State with you in the exact same recruiting class? Can you just be a consistent option? I don't think he needs to be a guy who kind of wrestles a starting job in the slot away from someone like Keandre Lambert Smith or whomever starts in that position. But kind of like Liam Clifford, can you just be a guy that if Penn State needs to rely on you, it's not going to look like a bad decision?
Tyler Johnson. You want this one?
I kind of put Tyler Johnson, Anthony Ivey, Carmelo Taylor, and Mekhi Flowers, who moved over from safety, in the same bucket. And it's basically just, can I get literally anything out of you? Literally anything. Like, if they couldn't break through last year when Penn State was desperate for someone to break through. Does that tell us more about them and where they were in their development and what they are as football players? Or does that tell us more about something else, whatever that something else would be? So can I just get anything out of you guys? Because I don't, let me go back and look. Have any of them recorded a catch in their college careers?
Ooh, great question. I don't think so. No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, no. I'm not going to ask too much out of you yet. It is getting late early for some of these guys. Tyler Johnson is a redshirt sophomore. Anthony Ivey is a redshirt sophomore. Mekhi Flower is a bit of a different situation just because he's switching positions, whatever.
But still a redshirt sophomore. Still year three for him.
Yeah, still year three. But at the same time, we're getting to the point where if it's not going to happen, it's hard to justify continuing to stay patient.
Yeah.
And can I just get something out of you guys? I don't care what it is. Just any little bit of anything I think Penn State would be very happy to have out of them.
For me, for them, and I'll bunch them all together, and then we can get up to the early enrollee in a second. But the slate has been wiped clean. Set the table properly. That's where I'm at for this. Let's set the table for what this next chapter of your career is going to look like. That's what I think success is this spring. Mm-hmm. Wipe that slate clean and just put your heads down and work. And that's where I think we're at from that perspective. And the last one, Josiah Brown, early enrollee injured. Get healthy, young man. Congratulations on getting English 15 out of the way in January as opposed to doing it over the summer.
Yeah, just get your body right. Awesome. Your body right and nothing else.
Bill, I think we made this pretty harmless. I think we powered through. I think we can bury officially the 2023 Penn State receivers room. I'm excited about what the future of this room holds. There's a couple guys coming in probably the May master or the summer, notably Peter Gonzalez out of Pittsburgh Central Catholic, I believe he went to. Always cool to get an in-state guy back into state college. Bill, anything else you want to talk about before we send the folks off into the rest of their week?
Yeah, it's just something that I looked up before we started, and it's from Daniel Jeremiah's recent top 50 for the 2024 NFL draft. Three of his top four players in this draft are wide receivers. Five of his top 25 players in this NFL draft are wide receivers, and 12 of his top 50 players in this draft are wide receivers. And I think with the direction that football is going, having elite talent at wide receiver, having guys you can rely on at wide receiver, is something that you just have to have. It's not one of those things where you can MacGyver an especially great wide receiver room out of guys who are okay. You need to have high level talent in your wide receiver room, guys who can go on to play in the NFL. You look at where these receivers went to school: Ohio State, Washington. A couple of them went to LSU. You just kind of go through this list of Texas, Michigan, etc. Some of the best programs in the country. And as we look back on what didn't work well for Penn State last season, you know, some of it's on Mike Yurcich, some of it's on Drew Aller, some of it's on this and this and this. A lot of it comes down to the fact that their wide receiver room didn't have guys playing at the level that they need to play at. And if they're going to have success this season, the kind of success that I think they're capable of having, there's a lot of talk about the five-star quarterback and Drew Aller elevating the room. He could elevate as much as he wants. If he doesn't have anyone to throw to, it doesn't matter. And Penn State needs these guys to have a big spring. The spotlight, the scrutiny, all these sorts of things need to be on them this spring. And if we come out of it with a bad taste in our mouths about the wide receiver room, beyond just the normal, you got to show me, don't tell me, it's going to be really hard to be all that optimistic about the offense being markedly better this season.
And like I said, with 13 Scully guys in that room, and three of them, I think, established a floor that is at least higher than the near sub sea level floor we kind of saw put in place last year, I think is a very, very small baby. Same thing with Penn State's offensive line for all those years. Give me baby steps and now look at us now. That's where I'm at with this wide receiver room. So, Bill, thank you so much for joining me. Next up, I believe you just want to do tight ends and offensive line in one go next week. We can fawn about tight ends for an hour if you want to, but I think that'll be a pretty short pod if we do it that way. We'll probably do both next week. What do you think?
Yeah, we'll probably pack both of them in together, but we'll see how we're feeling, see what happens over this next week. Yep. And if anything causes us to change up that plan, we'll change it up.
Penn State basketball makes a Big Ten tournament run. We will, of course, do our best to cover that as best we can. Bill, as always, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you, listener, for listening to this edition of Roar Lions Roar. Be sure to us. Yeah. Oh, my God, Bill, I'm choking it at the end here. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RLR Blog. We are also out there on Blue Sky. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. Leave us a question wherever you find a chance to leave us a question. We love to interact with our listeners. As always, thank you to Homefield for sponsoring this podcast. Use promo code RLR23 for 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. They make great clothing and they are fantastic partners to us. Bill, happy spring, happy return of spring ball, and thank you so much for listening. For my co-host, Bill DeFilippo, I'm Matt Lubavitz. Take care, everyone, and go State.